The information presented in this podcast is not intended for the treatment or prevention of disease or any medical condition, nor is a substitute for medical advice. The information contained herein in this podcast reflects only the opinion of the author and presenter and is in no way considered required practice.
Welcome to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connects your brain to your brawn.
Hi, this is Eric Fiorello, and I want to welcome you to Motivation and Muscle. This is the podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. Today is May 19th, 2015, and we are sponsored by U.S. Wellness Meats, www.grassfedbeef.com. Secondly, we are sponsored by Saugerties Chiropractic Center, 845-246-5020. Call them. They are in the right presently. They are rebuilding their website. And that is the best way to get a hold of Mark Colligan. Thirdly, we have Dr. William Wong, who's a regular on the show, www.docspreferred.com. Go out and check out his supplement line. He is sponsoring me for Iceland, and I thank him for that. Fourth, we got a regular on here. We're going to have Roger on later on today because we had big trouble with Skype this morning. AtomicAthletic.com. Roger's the president, and he's a regular on Motivation and Muscle. And last but not least, we have John Drake and MuscleMass.com, and they're running a special right now for anybody that listens to our show, 21% off their flagship product, Adaptogen N. Go out to their discount code, type in Motivation. You'll get 21% off plus free shipping, and if you buy three, you get one free. So once again, go out to MuscleMass.com. Today, we have another regular who we're going to have on every month, Dr. Robert Weil. He was on, I believe, probably about 3 weeks ago. We did a great show. And we're going to, you know, I'll give you a little background about him, then I'm going to bring him on. But we're calling the show the Sports Doctors In segment because he has his own show, a weekly show, and it is called the Sports Doctor. It's on healthylife.net. You got to check that out. He has a vast array of people on with a lot of knowledge, but he is definitely a guy that's in the orthotics and sports medicine, and we're going to really get into that. We got into that last time, but we're going to talk about a couple issues here. We're going to talk about what sports require the best athletes. We'll get into that a little bit, but we were just talking offline about icing injuries, and I've got some stuff with a shoulder right now, and he said you don't want to use ice, which he's the first person I ever heard say that, and we're gonna talk to him a little bit about that. So, Dr. Weil, welcome to Motivation Muscle, and if you would please just give a little brief bio about yourself, and we'll get started on these topics, please.
All right, Eric. Hey, it's nice to be back with you on your exciting show.
Thank you.
And the whole idea of the mental side of things and motivation. Of course, we don't want to leave out the muscle side of things. I'm a sports podiatrist. I'm in the Chicago area, Naperville, Illinois, Naperville, Aurora, practiced for decades. And in sports podiatry, our main focus is the role of the foot in sports, the fact that the foot is the first major shock absorber of the body, and we continually sing the song that the foot bone's attached to the ankle, attached to the leg bone. Almost everything in the lower extremity is affected by the role of the foot, and the fact that foot type is often inherited. So many times we'll see that whether it's flat feet or high arches or bow legs or knock knees, all these things can affect you posturally, let alone make you more or less susceptibility to injury. I do host a show. I've been involved in radio, Eric, for gosh, about 30 years, 20 years in the Chicago area public radio. Great blues jazz station WDCB at College of DuPage, and this past year and a half with all positive talk radio, Healthy Life Radio. They're on the West Coast, Manhattan Beach, California. Nice place to be. You and I being, you're in Albany, I'm in Chicago, so the West Coast sometimes is sounds like paradise to us during the winters. My show's on Wednesdays from 3 to 4 p.m. Central Time. And again, we talk about all aspects of sports medicine, whether it's nutrition, whether it is exercise, whether it is preventing injury or high performance. one regard or another. And I do take part in lots of different shows once a month, various different individuals. You're one of them. It's a pleasure to be back with you.
Well, we're glad to have you back because it's nice to have somebody out there that's really got some knowledge. And as they say, you've put the rubber to the pavement, too. So, you know, we don't have what you see more and more people like these armchair quarterbacks that they say all the right things. But when it comes time to put up, you don't see a lot of that. I don't think it's more theory with a lot of things. And that's not how we operate here. But that's neither here nor there. Let's talk about what these sports that require such, you know, such great athletes. I know we were getting into the NBA and we were talking about hockey and stuff.
Yeah, let me tell you, Eric, how that started.
Yeah, go ahead.
Let me tell you how that started. It was 2010, and one of my patients, who I had seen since he was 10 years old, Evan Lysacek, had just won the men's Olympic gold medal figure skating title in Vancouver. We had put orthotics in Evan's skates when he was 10 years old, and he grew up with them, and he had them for 15 years, and it became the best in the world. And at that time, right after the Olympics, it was getting into, you know, March, April, and you had, you know, the NBA finals with Kobe Bryant and the Lakers. We had Rafa Nadal into June with the French Open playing 4 or 5 hour matches. We were watching the Blackhawks competing for the Stanley Cup. We had just come off the football season, and one of the great questions that we came up with on the Sports Doctor was which sports require the best athletes? And the answers were multifaceted, to say the least. We had, again, people who felt that the NBA required the best athlete, running, jumping, moving, changing direction. We had people who mentioned triathletes. We had people who mentioned the defensive back on the football field, the guy who's got to dance and move and cover these incredible athletes. I had people who voted for water polo, try staying afloat for an hour at a time in a pool in that regard. Again, we had votes for people like Lysacek, who, when you see what it takes to become an Olympian in any sport, is incredible, you know, doing 1,000 triple jumps a year. So those kinds of answers were all over the map. It's hard to watch a hockey game and not marvel at the athleticism of some of these athletes. So I'd ask you, what do you think? What's your vote and thoughts about which sports might require the best athletes?
Well, I'll tell you, we had it at an old gym I went to. I love watching gymnasts. I was watching some of these girls come across, I don't know what you call it, their field of choice. I mean, flips, somersaults, amazing, you know, and I've seen that at a lot of ages. That's one thing that really impresses me. But I'll tell you, besides, you know, my love for stone lifting, because I think with some of the stuff, you got to be a hell of a complete athlete to do anything like that. But I'll tell you something that I'm probably going to get into next year a little bit is the Highland Games.
I have a patient who is a champion in the Highland Games. Her name is Ingrid Markham. And Ingrid was a United States weightlifting champion.
Yep.
She also was a gal who was on the alternate bobsled team when they were looking for these incredible athletes who could, you know, take off on that bobsled. Who was the quickest, fastest, strongest. But she was somebody who in the Highland Games, you know, throwing around telephone poles and lifting these incredible rocks and giant objects is that's really incredible. She's now into the CrossFit world. So, again, you're talking about great athletes who not only are super strong, but who also have incredible balance and stability. You know, and again, when you mention gymnastics, and like I was talking about Evan in figure skating, sometimes we call those sports part of the prodigy sports, where you have, and it's very important, I think, you know, I'm sure you have many listeners who are parents of young athletes, parenting the young superstar is one of the hot topics that we talk a lot about on the Sports Doctrine specialization. People can go to my website, ericsportsdoctorradio.com, and read a lot of the articles that talk about that, where you have adolescents and younger are being very, very serious about their sports at very, very young ages, and growing bodies are, you know, susceptible to all of these overuse injuries, and there's a lot of pressure on these kids. You know, part of your show is called Motivation, and we talk a lot.
Dr. Weil, the thing that, you know, obviously we're back, we're talking about who do we feel are the best athletes and what sports require these. We're talking about gymnasts, especially with the girls, and you were saying how you've seen so much with overuse, and we know that's a big thing in athletics. But when we go back into this with the girls with that type of gymnastics, there's one other thing, too, that I want to say. One of the reasons why when you asked me what I thought about sports that I really admired and thought had, like, needed the best athletes, and I said gymnastics, obviously, because of where I trained, I used to watch these kids, and they were just so impressive. And then secondly, obviously, we know my love for stones, and what an athlete, you got to be able to just pick one of those things up, let alone move it. But then I was talking about how I'm very interested in the Highland Games, and obviously you've had contact with people that were superior athletes and that. But you know what I really admire? You know, you like to always bring up the motivation, you know, the muscle, all that, and I'm with you 100%. But one of the reasons I like this stuff that I do more than Anthony, and I've played plenty of organized sports, I like being the single entity. I like the responsibility falling down on me all the time to perform. I never felt, and I'm not saying I wasn't a team guy, but I always like kind of running like a lone wolf. What's your feeling about that? And then let's get into, like, with the gymnastic end, we can finish that part.
Well, I think when you're talking about the idea of athletes who, for example, tennis, we've seen tennis players over the years. I saw John McEnroe years ago, Tracy Austin, these great, great champions, Jimmy Connors. I got a guy now out of Madison, Wisconsin, Tim Smizek, who's probably 60th in the world, who's a very, very exciting, quick as a cat type player. And when you're talking about the single sport athlete, they're a different animal. Again, you on the one hand, you don't have the advantage of being part of a team. That's why sometimes when I would see some of these young high school players in the sport of tennis, Eric, where they would love being part of a team on occasion because their whole career they were a single entity, like you just mentioned. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times we'll see, you know, we all know about the whether you want to call it the dance mom syndrome or the little league parent syndrome, where you or the Friday night tyke syndrome, where you've got ranting, raving parents and coaches with these young kids putting tremendous pressure on them with some of these schedules and the physical demands. So we start running into, you know, repetitive motion injuries where you're doing the same thing all the time, every day, even with a young growing body. And, you know, again, these prodigy sports, and again, gymnastics is a good example. So is figure skating. You know, so is tennis and soccer, where you, again, you might have 10-year-olds on traveling teams and playing every day and practicing every day. And it's one of the hot topics, again, that's a great article on my website at sportsdoctorradio.com. And the name of the article is called Young Athletes, One Sport or Many? Good Question. You know, a lot of times we like to recommend that these young kids play different sports, so they're using different parts of the body differently, but that's not the real world. Sometimes the more talented you are, like the young gymnasts that you used to watch, this is what they love, this is what they want to do. They might already be, you know, where do you find 15-year-old world champions? They're the kids who started probably at 4 or 5 years old, that kind of thing. It's not for everybody. And the mental side of things becomes something that is a major key, all of these points, which is, you know, whose goal is this? Is it mom or dad's?
There you
go. Is it the coach's goal, or is it the kid's? I'll tell you a quick story. We might have mentioned it on your first show, but it really tells it like it is. And if people go to my website, if they go to radio shows, March 2010, they'll listen to the radio show that I did with my young Olympic champion's mom, Tanya Lysacek. And I asked Tanya, how did you know, Tanya, that you weren't overdoing it with Evan? How did you know you weren't pushing him too hard with that tremendous schedule that was required to become an Olympian in any particular sport? And she said, you know, Dr. Weil, Evan had to get up at 5:30 in the morning to get up for ice time. Mm-hmm. I never had to wake him up. Mm-hmm. There he was with his gloves and his hat on, sitting on the stairs, ready to go. And I could have never thought of a better answer when it came to figuring out, you know, parents need to be great supporters of their young sons and daughters. But at the same time, you can't be an analyzer and you can't be a critic. So, again, when you play a single sport like you talked about where it's on your shoulders and it's all about you, I recommend to all of those athletes include sports psychology. It's just as important as training your body. You can learn how to pay real attention to focus, to intensity, to recovery, visualization, all these things I'm sure you talk a lot about when you're talking about motivation.
Well, look, here's my theory, and I want to see what you think. I think I told you, maybe not, my brother-in-law is you know, a varsity head coach for a big high school around here.
Yes, football, you mentioned that.
Right? Okay. And I've been on the bleachers with those parents, and I'll tell you what.
Yeah.
I'd like to throw them off the bleachers.
I hear you.
Okay? But here's my theory. And I'm not a fan of this station, so I'll make that clear before I say this. I think, I played all organized sports. Your parents are there. They want to see you do well. If you could make it to the big time, they'd be happy. My parents never pushed me like that. You know, my father was a stickler for detail. If you want to go out, you know, I'll help you out, all this and that. But it was never like it's life or death here. It was never put on me. There was things expected.
Yeah, I think
okay.
Most parents, for the most part, and coaches, do it the right way and pay attention. But there's not a season that goes by when we don't see examples, whether it's fighting on the sidelines, ranting and raving, screaming, hazing. And I used to have a sports psychologist, the late Jim Vickery, Eric, who spent 3-4 years on the radio with me. He used to talk about it a lot. He called it rules for parents. And he had a couple of bullets, and a few of them were, number one, don't be a critic of your son and daughter. It's great to talk about how they're doing and whether they're doing well. But he would say, if you don't have something good to say, don't say it. And he would also say there's nothing wrong with speaking to the coach if you feel that there's reasons to speak to the coach. And I'll bet your brother – is it your brother or your brother-in-law?
Brother-in-law.
He's got to be a sports psychologist, doesn't he?
Absolutely. I mean, you can see some – that you know, after a game, you look at him, and it's like the guy looked like he got put through the ringer. You know, it's a tough thing because I know for a fact you got parents calling you all the time. You know, you're getting threats from different – it's like it's ridiculous. But my theory where I think everything changed was ESPN. And I'll tell you why. I don't like that show at all, all right? I'll be flat out honest with you. I think it's just not something that I want to sink my teeth in at all.
No, it's exploitive in the areas we're talking about. I mean, when you televise – if you televise 2 weeks of the Little League World Series, for example, and you have these kids, or you're talking about already making stars out of these young kids,
exactly,
kids on TV, announcing where they're going to college and all of these kinds of things, I think it's way, way overboard. You know, they do a lot of great things, but at the same time, in the areas we're talking about, I definitely feel that there's definitely some areas of criticism when it comes to all of these kinds of things, especially with this overhype of youth sports.
Well, let's face it, you know, and nobody wants to say it, but I hate to break it to people out there, not every one of you is going to be a star. Now, would I ever say
it's to one you, out of thousands, Eric.
Exactly. And would I ever say to any kid or even any adult, you can't get better? Absolutely not. That's not how you do things. You want to make people get better. You want to help them out along the way. But if you think that by watching ESPN World Series or whatever you're into, that you're suddenly your son or daughter is going to become the cream of the crop, I hate to break it to you, you're going to spend a lot of money and find out down the road one or two things. No, and maybe they just don't want to do it anymore. And that's where I think we damage the psychology of a child, because if you're told you're great all the time, and suddenly you go somewhere else and you're not, you're just in the pack now, that's devastating to anybody, you know, let alone a child. So, you know, what do we do in a case like this when you've got, you know, you've got damaged goods here now? How, if you can, how are you ever going to resurrect the child's self? You know, I hate that word self-esteem, but let's just call it confidence. How do you get them back? What are you going to do to be able to get a child back, Dr. Watts?
Well, I think, you know, when it comes to the physical side of things, number one, I think, you know, parents need to pay attention to kids who are hurting. You know, sometimes we will see examples. We might have a young 10-year-old skater or soccer player sitting there whose feet and ankles are really, really bothering them. They're almost scared to admit it to their mom or dad because their mom and dad is so involved in this whole process of, what do you mean you're still hurting? And boy, we spent so much money. And gee, you know, you got to gut it out. And if there's no pain, there's no gain. So many times we'll see that, you know, parents need to pay attention to their kids, especially with some of this overscheduling with some of these different sports. I have a young basketball player. The kid's a junior in high school. He's already looking for scholarships, and he's got some offers. On weekends, they play 4, 5, 6 games. Now, you wouldn't have a professional athlete going anywhere near that. Their body can't tolerate it. Or a young kid is going to hockey tournaments and playing a triple header over the weekend because of the constraints of ice time. So I think when I have, and we have many times psychologists and others on the sports doctor talking about these challenges of when does what's fun and the positive things about youth sports start to turn into a job or drill, these kinds of things, you know, because like we talked about before, a lot of these overuse injuries are from the point of because you can't back off, you can't take some time off to let some of these things calm down, and it becomes a real detriment. So I like to include family counseling. I like to include sports psychology, not because your son or daughter has problems or because you have problems, because if you want to enhance performance, you could learn how to I remember Tracy Austin, the great tennis player who used to be – she was the poster girl for burnout. Remember? They used to – and she got so sick and tired of hearing that. You know, burnout. Or the Williams sisters, their dad, who was their coach, their whole creative time.
Yep.
And he used to get criticized like crazy. You're not a professional coach. He'd say, my girls are going to be the best in the world. They thought he was out of his mind. They ended up being the best in the world. He was teaching tennis from a book. Whatever he did it pretty darn well, to say the least. So a lot of times we see that bringing in mental training, including that as a positive, whether it's visualization, whether it's learning how to concentrate and focus, putting things in perspective makes a lot of sense when it comes to these kinds of problems. And we say the same thing physically. Again, if you're a very active athlete yourself, if you are the parent of a very active or a serious youngster, then you want to do some good screening. You want to know what's the best shoe for your son or daughter to be in. What type of training should they be doing that would allow them to hold up physically to the particular sport? And again, if you're going to be an analyzer, the sports psychologist friend of mine used to talk about, you remember Todd Marinovich?
Yeah,
yes. Oakland. We saw Todd Marinovich. He must have been 12 or 13 years old. And his father's claim to fame was, you know, my son never had a hamburger, and my son never ate junk food, and he trains like this. And he became a professional. He went to USC.
Sure he did.
He played for the Oakland Raiders, and he burned out in a
–
he spent years not talking to his family because of what went on with this intense training regimen, almost like a Marine sergeant – Andre Agassi, when he wrote his book saying, I hated tennis.
Yeah.
He was in the crib looking at tennis balls, swaying back and forth. So that kind of intensity, to say the least, isn't for everybody.
Yep.
And you got to pay attention. This is why we tell parents all the time, discuss these things with your son or daughter, whether it is the problems they might be having with their particular coach or mentors, whether it is dealing with particular types of overuse injuries, other kinds of problems, and the idea of screening, which is, again, is your son or daughter over-flexible? Are they too rigid?
Yeah.
Are they working? A very famous therapist, Bob Guida, would be a great guy to have on your show. Bob was a Mr. America, Mr. Universe. He trained some of the best athletes in the world. Gosh, from Jim McMahon to McEnroe to all the 85 Super Bowl Bears, Bill Buckner. And he would say, strengthen the opposites.
That's interesting.
Work the brakes.
Yep. Yep.
Learn how to fall. All of these kinds of things that would become very important. If you're going to be throwing around, how heavy are those stones that you're throwing around in the Highland games, Eric?
Well, I'm not doing anything with Highland yet, but that Husafell stone's 418 pounds. You got to walk it for 50 meters.
That's unbelievable. That truly is. Again, you would think it only takes, think of the balance and stability that
Absolutely.
It takes. That's why we talked about having that athlete in the right kind of shoes. And the right kind of inserts in those shoes becomes the key when you're talking about rolling around. I would think that's a superhuman feat, to say the least.
Well, I'll tell you what. If you go out and type in Husafell Stone in YouTube, you can see. I'd love to get your take on the terrain you're walking on. Because
Great point.
Now, you gotta remember, this thing is a sheep pen that was built by hand. All rocks, okay? So you're walking around the sheep pen, but you're on land that is not smooth. There's a lot of stone, a lot of, like, old-looking grass, shale, all kinds of stuff.
Is that on purpose, Eric, having the...
I don't think so, because when Snorri Bjornsson built it back hundreds of years ago, he was the pastor there, and that's what they did. See, what he did, basically, with this thing was... He milked the goats there, okay? And if you look at this pen, you'll have two big strips in each center. And what he used to do is he'd take the ones out he was going to work on and put the Husafell stone in front of it so it would block him from getting out. Well, he became so proficient with this stone that he started carrying it. Now, this is a volcanic stone, which the interest of this is this. Most stones have something you can bury your fingers in. We call them handholds. Something to grab hold of. This thing has nothing. And we're talking a massive stone that kind of looks like a shield. I believe when we built ours here, the steel ones, I believe it's over 8 inches from the side, all right, to grab. So I don't care how big. You'd have to have a tree hand to totally wrap around this thing. So that's why your wrist takes such a beating, because you're trying to curl that with your hand and grab something on the front of the stone. But the biggest thing with this thing is when you – a lot of guys will turn it different directions. Sometimes, I know from doing this stuff, sometimes a set of eyes is one of the best things when you're doing this, because believe it or not, turning something like that maybe another 45 degrees could be the make or break of you. But I've learned two things. Obviously, we were lifting them until I tore an 8, and then we went in 11, and we got caught in a storm. We were in there in November, which was pretty dangerous, but I did pick the thing up, and I learned one thing.
Hold on tight.
Hold on tight, but here's the deal. Lift it as you train it, okay? Because a lot of guys will go there, and they'll turn it, or they'll turn it on the side, or whatever they'll do to get it up. Chances are, unless you've trained like that, you're not going to get it. So the way we built the ones here, just picture like a big shield, and it gets a little bit leaner at the bottom, but I don't call it lean whatsoever. It's lean or not much. The way I'm going to do it this time is I'm going to get down as low as I can, obviously, through the other things I'm doing right now, wrap my arms around it, and I'm going to pull that thing up just like a front squat. That's what it's going to be. I'm not going to lap it on the thighs or anything. I'm going to try to just explode it right off the ground. Wrap, my arms will be wrapped around it, and soon as I'm up, you take off, because you've got very little time to try to get that thing in position, because once you got that up, and if you're not moving quickly, chances are you're not getting around. You're going to drop
it. It's funny, talking about great athletes, again, Bob Guida, who was a weightlifter also, would talk about the snatch as being one of the most athletic events. What was required, whether it was the propulsive superpower, the stability, the balance, to say the least, with something like with one of these giant stones, there's got to be so much involved in being able to not only get this thing up, but stabilize it, balance it, move in whatever direction. Sounds superhuman.
Well, it's a real athlete. And you got to be a real athlete to do any of this. Don't get me wrong, but this is a little bit more special. This is why I have a feeling. My theory is this, and I've talked to other people about it on the show and privately. And they'll say, "Why do you think so many strong guys won't go over?" Now, I would hope that most of the guys that know anything about any time of real physical stuff has at least heard of it. If you watched, you know, any of the World's Strongest Man, it was big in 92.
Yes, that was a huge popular TV show.
Huge. Watch that. That's got the whole carry. They brought the stone over to a certain place. The stone was, what did they put down on that? I'm trying to think. They had to take out a form of insurance on it. I believe it was insured for over $1 million.
Oh, yes, I remember they would have to not only pick it up and carry it, they would have to put it up on a platform.
Well, they used to do that, but this was strictly carry for meters. All right, now here's the great thing about it. When we got talking about this, this is my theory. To be very strong is one of the greatest things you could ever accomplish. To have God-given, you know, abilities to do things like that year after year, decade after decade, from being around these athletes, a lot of them have very bad injuries. They come back, you know, they go and recapture it again, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But my feeling is this: once you have a reputation and you go and do something like that, and let's just say you fail, all right? And I'll give you a quick example of it. I had a Highland Games on guy from the Netherlands about a month ago, Rainer Wartel. Real interesting guy. 2 years ago, they had a big meet in Iceland. Of course, these guys, knowing about the Husafell Stone, decided to drive there. I think there was one guy out of the whole pack that made it around, because none of them trained for it. Raynor told me it took him 7 attempts to finally stand up with this thing. Now, these are not weak men at all. These are devastating athletes. I mean, they've got the whole package like we were talking about. But, you know, this is my theory, Dr. Weil. I don't think anybody wants to go over and get their ass kicked. So, you know, excuse my French, but it's like if you're a big deadlifter or bencher or overhead and suddenly – you know, people are going to say, well, you couldn't lift a 418-pound stone and get around 50 meters with it. I don't think people want to be known as a guy that failed with something like that, because let's face it, a lot of these guys are making their money off their reputation.
Well, of course, you don't want to be embarrassed. Right, you don't want to be embarrassed. And you know, there's something, again, with a big T, and it's called technique.
Well, you know what the interesting thing is, though? I don't care about things like that. I went over there just like Bill Crawford, and Bill is probably one of the greatest stone lifters in the world. You know, we both blew our biceps. He had his fixed. You know, he's done monumental stuff. He's going back over to Iceland, carried, you know, Highland Games. They have a big Highland Games in September. He's from New Hampshire, and he's an MD. And he's on the show now all the time, too. And he invited me up, and you know, there's a very good chance, whether I'm up there or not, you know, we're going to have Magnus for Magnuson and Thor on the podcast in September. So the point I'm trying to make is this. I understand the ego. I understand, hey, you know, I'm noted for this. But you know what? My theory is no guts, no glory either. It's like, you know what? I went there. I blew my arm out. I could have blew my career gone down the drain. Now, because that's another thing, too, we haven't gotten into yet. The psychological thing after something's happened to you like that is, and I'm not going to say it didn't happen to me, The thing that concerned me more than anything was, what is that going to feel like the first time I walk up to something and lift a stone? Am I going to have the mental tenacity still to be able to not be fearful of more damage?
No, I think it's a point, Eric. There's a, I had a guest on the show probably 6 months ago. Robert Andrews is a part of the Institute of Sports Psychology out of Houston, Texas, and sports performance, and some others. And they were talking about that very point, which was whether you're, for example, Derrick Rose, you're coming off two or three knee surgeries, whether you're Kobe Bryant, you're coming off an Achilles and something else. The fact of the psychological challenge that it is, for instance, to get back on the balance beam after you've fallen off and had a bad injury, or getting back into that activity. And he felt that many athletes did not have the kind of sports psychology or psychology counseling that would help them get back, that they were mostly relying on their own gut and grime to be able to get back out there. And that it definitely was a challenge when an athlete has had maybe repetitive injury or a career-threatening injury, and they're like a deer in the lights, you know, watching their whole career go in front of their eyes. So there's no doubt about it that the psychological challenge of getting back on the horse, so to speak, in quotes, is a real, real challenge, let alone something I know we want to touch on before the show is over, whether you're putting ice on it.
Yeah, but could I just say one thing to you quick? All right. I talked to a lot of people that have had that blew biceps out, okay? I was not going to go in this thing cold. But I also have I have a tenacity in me that's pretty brutal. And I it takes an awful lot in anything I do in my life with anyone to, like, shoot me down and tell me to quit, turn my back, and walk away. I have a real problem with that. I'll tell you what I did, and I'll make it quick, and we'll get right into the ice. I started lifting small stones again, okay? And when I approached anything, believe it or not, in my mind's eye was that Husafell stone. Every time, and I still do it to this day, I never did it like this before. It wouldn't matter if it was a 60-pound stone or a 350-pound stone. I would not pick up that stone until that Husafell stone was locked right in my eyesight. It was like that stone was in front of me. You got to lift. And I lifted that thing with purpose like that. I grabbed the 60-pound stone like I grabbed the 418, and I throttled it every time, all right? Well, I'll tell you what. I didn't think about getting hurt anymore. I didn't think about the injury anymore. And I'll tell you what, I became a better stone lifter from it. That's all I want to tell you. I mean, we can go into this to another time.
You're a great example of the right kind of technique that we're talking about, somebody who's using visualization and positive reinforcement, someone who's willing also to be smart, to start gradually, not try to set records, but who's got that goal firmly planted in their mind. It sounds like you could teach the course.
Well, I love doing it. I'll tell you what, Dr. Weil, this is the big determiner of everything, I think. And you and I have talked about this, the responsibility. And if you really want to go, look, I started a good friend of mine's son out on Saturday training. Very good basketball player, needs to put a little weight on. I started him out with the three big warm-ups that I do. I've done for 15 years now, and I started them out with brief and light strongman training because I feel it right now to get them going. It's the best bang for the buck, and number two, we'll switch to one major exercise at the end of the month, and I'm going to put them right on a trap bar deadlift because I'm in the process right now of building a brand-new design of a trap bar deadlift that will – you'll be able to lift and power it up in the power rack, which means you're not going to have to do anything other than you'll have a full all-out trap bar. And I'm doing that mainly for the supination with the biceps. I want to keep them healthy. But there's not much out there where you can take a trap bar and do all the things you would do with an Olympic bar because mainly they're too short. Well, I want to be able to overload, et cetera, et cetera. So this is what I'm going to do a little out when I get him. The end of the month we'll do it, or next month, I mean. So to make a long story short.
How old is he?
He just turned 14.
All right. So remember, it's rapid growth in that area.
Yep.
You know, you got to be smart and careful posturally.
Very.
As well as, again, getting some good analysis from your chiropractic friend, as well as others, which is, you know, what's his body type, what's his foot type, and work from there.
Yep. Well, I'm good. We've been talking about that yesterday because I don't want anything to happen to him, but I'm being very smart with him. He's not going to get overloaded with anything. We're going to build him gradually. He's got his whole damn life. You know what I mean? But when he goes back to school in September, you know, he's not out yet. He's going to look a hell of a lot different physique-wise. Those kids aren't going to know what hit them when they see this kid, you know. And I'll put my reputation on it because, like I told
him. Give him that T-shirt, man, muscles and motivation.
We'll have to talk. I've just changed the branding. I'm going to send you a bunch of stuff. But here's the deal. I asked him the first thing I asked him, and I've known him since he was a little kid. I said, how bad do you want it? And he just looked, and his eyes lit up. He goes, I want it real bad. I said, because I'm going to ask you this the first time you feel like you're falling down and I'm on your shit. Because I was like, I'm real fair, but you know how I am. And his parents are the same way. This kid's going to do real well. He's hungry, and he's a nice kid, well-mannered. He's real respectful, and it's going to sink in if it hasn't already. But we'll talk more about that in the next show. All right, let's talk about ice. We've got about 7 minutes.
Okay.
This surprised me when you told me this because I was telling Dr. Wild just to set this up. You know, I'm having some issues on the side with where I tore the bicep, some shoulder stuff, and it set me back. And I said, I'm icing. And he's like, no good. Here you go. I'm segueing right into you.
Okay. I had a guest on. I've had him on a few times. People can go to sportsdoctorradio.com. His name is Gary Reinl, R-E-I-N-L. Gary is a trainer of champions, Olympic athletes in all sports. He's worked with athletes in every major sport, hockey, football, baseball, et cetera, all the professional sports. And he's written a book called Iced, I-C-E-D. He spent over 10 years researching the topic. And the point is that all of the ideas that ice was helpful in enhancing recovery, in helping healing, is there's no evidence to that effect. Even the man, Dr. Merkel, who coined the phrase RICE, R-I-C-E, rest, ice, compression, elevation. It's almost the religion of everybody for an acute problem. Recently came out and said, you know, it was one of these things that hasn't been proved to be true. All the evidence shows that except for numbing an area, inflammation is a normal part of healing after an injury. Inflammation where the body rushes to the part, ingredients that can sometimes cause swelling, is a natural, normal part of healing. Icing and ice going back to the 60s and 70s was really coined as something when there was a severed body part, like a finger, something was cut off. They would pack it in ice, so it would cut down the deterioration of the tissues, and it did that very, very well. It then became used almost routinely in every aspect of sports and other types of injury, yet there's never been any real research evidence that shows that except for numbing an area, that ice enhances the recovery process because it shuts down the super cold, shuts down the ability of the circulation to get waste products out of the area and good healing blood nutrients into the area. It retards that process. And Gary talks about, many others, about muscle activation, stimulating movement of the areas adjacent to the injury. Let's say you've got a swollen ankle, and instead of putting ice on it, which might actually retard the healing, they might be moving the toes, moving the knee up and down, stimulating muscle activation of the adjacent areas to stimulate the lymph system to get waste products out and nutrient healing blood nutrients in. This is almost a religion when it comes to physical therapy and sports injury, yet when they go back and there have been various international studies that have tried to determine, does ice help? And the reality is it does not help.
Wow.
In some instances, it actually retards. It can make a difference in pain, in numbing an area. But even when it comes to reducing swelling, there are real questions, and I would recommend, again, that you can Google Gary Reinel. You can Google the book Iced. He spent probably 10 years in going over every part of research available to determine. And I'll make a comparison to my colleague Bob Dida, the famous kinesiotherapist, who for years argued against stretching, that it was counterproductive, that it really would cause more naivety of areas. If you didn't have strength over that increased range of motion, Eric, you were more susceptible to injury.
Right.
And we've all seen, you know, stretch when you're cold, don't bounce, stretch when you're hot, warm up this way, do something that way. And I think you're going to see in the famous Arnold Schwarzenegger show that was in March, America's Next Great Trainer, Gary Reinel, was on their board of advisors.
Oh,
so
wow.
This is an eye-opening revelation that says that there are better ways to rehabilitate an area. And icing was always convenient, cheap. You didn't need any expertise. Hey, man, throw an ice bag on it.
Exactly.
I'm not saying that there aren't some areas that are still questionable regarding hot and cold types of therapies, but Gary's revelation, again, if people go to my website, sportsdoctorradio.com, they go to radio shows, they can listen to Gary. He's been on twice on The Sports Doctor. Again, they can go read his book, and you'll Google yourself for your own edification.
Because
if you line up 10 doctors and 10 therapists, it's starting to change, but almost still you will hear Rice principles, rest, ice, compression, elevation. And the man who coined that has recently written, you know, I was wrong. So this is one of the things that, again, surprises lots of people. And maybe between now and next time we do a Sports Doctors In segment on your terrific show, you'll have an opportunity to get some feedback with that, well as how's those knees and lower extremities with you since you put some inserts in your shoes, my friend?
They feel good.
Here you go.
I've been doing fine. When I have the currency, I'm coming to Chicago to see you.
I will look forward to it, man.
That'll be a good time. We're crushed for time right now. So if you would, sir, would you give all your information out? I'll give mine, and I'd like to just talk to you briefly offline for a minute.
Okay. Again, the Sports Doctor Radio Show is on live every Wednesday, 3 to 4 p.m. Central Standard Time. Tomorrow I have a softball, women's fast pitch softball blogger on. I have a famous columnist, Neil Steinberg, talking about the Divi bikes and riding bikes in the city on tomorrow. People can listen to my best radio shows, Eric. They can read a lot of my articles on all sorts of sports medicine if they go to sportsdoctorradio.com, written out, sportsdoctorradio.com. Click on radio shows, click on newspaper articles, and we'd be glad to hear from people. And it's been fun joining you again, my friend.
Oh, always. I wish we could talk. If I had the time and you had the time, I'd talk to you for another hour, believe me. This is Motivation Muscle. This is a podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. We're sponsored by U.S. Wellness Meats, Saugerties Chiropractic Center, Dr. William Wong's DocsPrefer.com, AtomicAthletic.com, and MuscleMass.com. The sites are www.FiorellaBarbellCo.com, which you're going to see some big changes very shortly. All redone. MotivationandMuscle.com. That's been all redone. If you go out there with our new branding, looks exceptional. I want to thank Chris for that. And we're working on total automation of everything here. Wait till you see these sites once they're all put together. And that might be within the next week. We're pretty close right now. You can hear us on iTunes and Stitcher. Write me a review on iTunes. I'd greatly appreciate it. Let's see. You can get a hold of us at FiorelloBarbellCo.com. If there's something Dr. Weil and myself you'd like to hear from us, I'm sure we could put it together for you. And also, I'm on Twitter at Fiorello Eric, and I believe that's it. I'm probably forgetting something, but the majority of it's out there. As I always say before, we're going to sign off with Dr. Weil. If someone seeks you out in a gym or out in the concrete jungle, give them the time. You never know who you're changing, who you're helping. And, you know, just that spoken word or that smile might be all that person's going to get that day. So take your strength and really put it out there for what it's for, you know, and enjoy it, relish it, because I'll tell you what, at some point we're probably going to lose it near the very end, and that's the last thing I want. I love it so much. Dr. Weil, once again, pleasure to have you on, sir.
Thanks, Eric.
And we'll do this again. So for Dr. Weil, this is Eric Fiorello. Thanks for listening, and we will talk to you again soon.
Thanks so much for listening to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connected your brain to your brawn. We'll see you next time.